following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Tropical hot dog night. I see flamingos in a fruit fight. Every cover of day,
welcome to Dave's Gone By, 90 minutes of talk radio, comedy, music, interviews, and more, coming to you live from the snow-capped peaks of Merritt, Long Island. And yes, I'm live back at the studio tonight. Last week I had to jettison most of my plans for the show, most of the musical ones anyway, because I was getting over a head cold and I thought it best to stay home. I would have made the effort to get to the station, except Sunday night was the beginning of the great blizzard of 03. And I just said to myself, between my cold and wondering how the heck I'd get back home from the station in the middle of a snowstorm, I took the coward's way out and just stayed in casa. So I did the first half hour live from my house, which was pretty cool. I sat in my own bed. I had my notes in front of me. I felt like John Lennon. You know, if you can't come to the media will come to you. I had a glass of water, a mug of hot tea, and cough drops on my night table, all provided by my lovely wife, Joyce, by the way. And I just hung out in my bed, doing the intro, a bit about the Gettysburg Address, and the news gone by. But even after only half an hour, my throat started to go. So I was happy I sounded as good as I did, because I woke up that morning and I didn't even know if I'd have a voice. But I say without vanity, I sounded pretty good last week, a little gravelly towards the end, but also a notch deeper. My wife said I sounded more serious, more like one of those WINS news people than the kook I usually sound like. Anyway, thank you, Engineer Paul, for making the phone connection and having it sound so good. I love being at the station. I love doing the show with a mix of CDs and cassettes and having an engineer there to keep on top of things and give me feedback. But it's also nice to know that this can be done from home or an office or wherever and still sound professional and vital and good, which is why tonight's show is coming not just from WGBB, but from WGBB's unisex bathroom. I wanted to get that special echo effect, and I'm perched on the special Mickey B. Invitational Throne. And if you hear an occasional plop and splash, well, that's just me putting ice cubes in my soda. Well, what did you think it was? But seriously, folks, I am at the station. Good to be back and glad it isn't snowing again. That was a heck of a storm. They say it was the worst since 1996, but I don't know. That one reminded me of the storms we used to get in the 1970s. We got spoiled by relatively snow-free winters the past few years, but I remember when I first moved out to the island and I went from apartment living to having a house, well, my parents' house, and when it snowed, I didn't just get to go out and play in it and build anatomically horrifying snowmen. I had to go shovel the stuff. I think that's when I instantly went from being a teenager to a grumpy old man. I was like, wait a minute, I'm glad I got the day off from school, but it's taking the whole morning to clear the damn driveway. The good news for everybody, I guess, was that last week's blizzard fell on President's Day. I mean, people probably missed out on a snow day. Offices might have closed anyway just because of the storm. So people might think they were cheated out of a free holiday, although some folks probably took off Tuesday. But at the same time, on Monday, they didn't feel obligated or guilty about missing work. They didn't go to sleep Sunday night wondering, well, what if it's only 6 or 7 inches? What if the railroad's not running? What if it's only 3 inches but still snowing, etc.? They knew, no matter what, they could sleep in. People got a break, and it also made it easier for the snowplows and emergency vehicles to get around. And I have to say, I live on a side street, so off a main road, but it's certainly not a main road itself. Yet they plowed at least twice, probably 3 times, which is what we pay our enormous taxes for. But still, a round of applause for the town of Hempstead and whoever's in charge of dealing with all that. I went to sleep Monday night, and I knew they plowed again, because there was the clump of gray snow dumped where I had shoveled a few hours before. But hey, it's cool, they did the job. I wish they had done a better job along Broadway and West Broadway, though. You know, I don't understand the mentality of shopkeepers. They do this amazingly neat job of shoveling outside their stores. This very clear pathway along the sidewalk, and yet no one bothers to clear a path between the gutter and the sidewalk. So we've got these huge mounds of slush, ice, and snow all along the curb. The gutter's clear, no problem there. You cross the street, you see the stores open, and you see the sidewalks nice and clean in front of them. But between you and the sidewalk are these impassable mounds of snow. And you wonder, couldn't the store owners have banded together to shovel a couple of access paths? I mean, after the town has plowed the roads. I realize you can shovel and the plows come by and create new barriers of snow. Or you dig a path and melting just fills it in with water and slush. That's a pain. But still, you take a shovel and you get rid of it. And if you have to do that a couple of times a day so your customers don't get frostbite or so they don't say a hell with it and shop on the other side of the street, well, what's the big hoo-ha? I get a call on Wednesday morning around 9:30, that early, and it's one of those ungodly pre-taped courtesy calls. It's Lohmann's, the clothing store, telling me they're having a last-minute sale on Thursday, 10% extra off to make up for the hit they took on President's Day, which I guess would ordinarily be a high-traffic day for them. And I'm like, don't call me with this crap at 9:30 in the morning. Don't call me with this crap at all. And it was really upsetting because I was talking to a machine. But that day, I go to Lohmann's just to get my name off the phone call list. And one whole side of the building, a sidewalk side facing West Broadway, had not been shoveled. And the curb near the parking lot still had snow and ice everywhere. And I'm thinking, you're so desperate for customers, you'll bother them with stuff you can just as easily put in the mail. But you won't make the effort to let people get to your store without their shoes turning into buckets. And they're not the only ones, of course, and over the years we've shopped at Lohmann's, and they have some nice stuff at very good prices. So guys, if you want to advertise, but really, have a little courtesy. Anyway, I hope you all got through the snow all right. If you were like me, you were watching wall-to-wall snow coverage on the TV stations, from the beginning of the storm Sunday night till prime time Monday evening. They preempted everything for blizzard coverage, which, I admit, was compulsively watchable. But I do have to wonder, what really is the point? Guy gets on the TV and says, it's snowing. It's still snowing, probably will for another few hours. What else is there really to say? Everything you personally need to know about a snowstorm, they can tell you in 2 minutes. How many inches? When is it going to stop? How much total? What's tomorrow's weather going to be, freeze or thaw? What's up with mass transit and highways? Are schools closed tomorrow, and are Kennedy and LaGuardia down or just delayed? That's all. Everything else is just pictures. Everything else is just some news reporter standing on a street in Manhattan, where you're not, saying, well, it's snowing here. That car over there is stuck. That store back there is closed early. Then they cut to another reporter out in New Jersey. Yeah, it's snowing here. Let's talk to a guy with a shovel. Hey, how you doing? How long you been out here? About an hour or so. Do you like the snow? Well, sometimes, but not this much. Ha 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 ha. They're saying 3 more inches before it's all over. What do you think of that? Hey, gotta do it, right? And that's all you see, hour after hour, because what else is there to say? It's snowing! But what totally amazed me is that watching the broadcasts, tuning in all day long, all evening long, Monday night, the different channels, all of them saying, we got 18 inches, 19 inches, don't overdo the shoveling, if you're going to start your car, make sure you dig out the exhaust pipe, don't asphyxiate, prepare for commuting delays tomorrow morning, all that coverage, all that verbiage, not one of them prepared me for what I saw when I looked out the window when I woke up on Tuesday. It was snowing again. Somehow, in their froth at labeling this the fourth biggest storm in area history, they neglected to add one little thing, one helpful piece of information, that a few hours after the storm was over, there would be more snow! You think they could have popped that in somewhere. You think they could have said, if you wake up tomorrow morning and you see heavy flurries, don't panic, further accumulation, if any, will be less than an inch. And I would have been like, okay, no problem. Now I know what I have to deal with. Thanks, Chuck and Sue. Thanks, Sam Champion. You guys really do have the best Doppler. Galaxy 500 with Snowstorm from their 1989 album On Fire. And I'm fired up about tonight's show, which, as always, is a mix of smart talk, silly talk, interviews, and eclectic music, coming to you 7:30 to 9 p.m. every Sunday on WGBB AM 1240 Freeport and live streaming on WGBB.com. It's currently about 7:49 p.m., and time for my usual disclaimer. Ooh, this program is rated DGB-13. That means I will probably say 13 tasteless or offensive things over the next hour and a half, which may or may not be family appropriate. Nothing obscene or FCC 21. Just a caution that some content might make Frosty the Snowman grab his snowballs and run. And speaking of balls, we have a score for you. Tampa Bay has just tied it up 3-3 early in the first quarter, stunning the Raiders a little bit. We're bringing you late-breaking coverage of Super Bowl 27. Very late-breaking coverage. Those of you who missed it, we were on the air January 26th while the Super Bowl was happening. And as a service to the listeners, I gave periodic updates of the score. Well, people were very grateful for that, and they really liked getting that information. So we're continuing to do it. This is radio. You got to stay with what works. So again, Oakland and Tampa Bay are knotted 3-3. It looks like the Bucs are surging towards another score, and I'll keep you posted throughout the night on events in San Diego as they happened. And as for the Grammys, well, I know they're tonight. But does anyone really care if Norah Jones beats Michelle Branch? If Nickelback trounces Nelly? I'd like to see Avril Lavigne lick Pink, but that's something else entirely. So I don't know if we'll be doing Grammy updates tonight. We might try, but what will we be doing tonight? Well, the name of this episode is Big Daddy. No relation to the long-gone chain of hot dog joints. This one is for my Big Daddy, Philip Ian Lefkowitz, 66 years old today, February 23rd. Happy birthday, Dad. I know you're listening. You better be listening, or else I'll send people to shovel snow onto your driveway. But my dad has had, I think, a very typical American life. Jewish parents struggling to make it in America, growing up in Brooklyn in the 1940s and 50s, military service, trying to make ends meet, marriage, a kid, the move to the suburbia, career changes, retirement, the difficulties of growing older. It's the template of middle-class America. Very much of a certain pattern, but also, of course, unique and special, because he's my dad. So I'll be talking to Dad and asking him a bunch of stuff, which I'm curious about, and I hope you'll enjoy, too. But also, the best way of honoring my pop, I think, is musically. I like to think that I have very eclectic and broad musical taste. I'm a bit of a snob. I was part of the Death to Disco crowd in the early 80s, and I hate NSYNC just because I'm supposed to hate NSYNC. And sometimes I'm late catching on to things, or I'll dismiss kinds of music that I'll later grow to cherish, which has happened with everything from Bob Dylan and Neil Young to Nirvana and certain kinds of rap or punk. That said, my taste is certainly broader than my parents. In fact, they dislike a lot of the music I play on this program. It's just a generational thing. But what I got from Dad was a basic sense that different types of music could be good, that you could listen to Beethoven's Violin Concerto and then be in the mood for the Limelighters and then put on the radio and dig CBS FM for a while. He went through a country music phase that I could have lived without, especially since it was always when we were on vacation and taking these five-hour car rides to Atlantic City or Montreal or wherever, and there was WHN playing the same 20 country songs over and over. And every time Red Sovine came on, I kept praying that once, just once, one of those truckers would put Teddy Bear's wheelchair in the middle of the road and plow through it while Teddy Bear was still in it. Now, I didn't mind John Denver or Willie Nelson, but hearing the Starland Vocal Band 12 times a day was about as far from an afternoon delight as anything I could think of. Anyway, whatever I thought of individual songs or certain artists Dad liked that I couldn't get into, his eclecticism was absolutely an inspiration to me. Growing up, I didn't have a swimming pool, I didn't have ponies, I had toy cars that I played with, but mostly I had books, records of my own, and Dad's record collection, which gave me all the world I needed. He had a lot of singles, everything from Laverne Baker to Benny Goodman's Sing, 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 divided into part one and part two to fit on a 45. And there'd be Tom Jones and Teresa Brewer, the Tokens, the Isley Brothers, And later, Shugie Collins, Ronnie Millsap, Jane Oliver, A Fifth of Beethoven. It was wide-ranging, from truly classic music to kitsch that just had a good hook. Dad simply had a sense of what makes a great record. He knew that a truly terrific 3 or 4 minutes of music was a confluence of more than just the lyrics or just the singer or the beat. A certain sound just happened. You knew it when you heard it, and what you heard was a great record. You know, man, that's a great record. And while my tastes range far and wide of what his are, as happens with all kids, it certainly set me up for appreciating a catchy song no matter what the genre. Now, Mom had a bunch of 45s from the oldies era, and all the doo-wop stuff and Alan Freed-era rock and roll, and some Jewish records like the Barry Sisters and Shlomo Carlbach. But the 1960s rock revolution kind of passed over both my folks, although they could certainly get into a good Beatles or Stones number. And Dad's album collection was solidly from the non-rock genre. That meant a lot of classical music albums, jazz, jazz vocalists, Dixieland. He had a lot of those EP-length records, the 7-inchers by people like Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Big Spiderbeck. Not much of a Broadway collection, but there was Fiddler, and My Fair Lady, and Hair, and the soundtrack to the movie version of Oliver. And there was also Tom Lehrer, and Pardon My Blooper, and Shelley Berman, and the Clancy Brothers, and ABBA, and Ray Charles. It was a musical education in the sense that you open one door, and that leads to another, and another, and another. And you can walk around or go deep into any particular room, but there's always another new room with something interesting in it, just down the hall. And as such, I became a record collector and hoarder, later CD collector, and someone who takes very seriously and personally the privilege of sharing music with other people. It's one of the reasons I'm here. It's also one of the reasons I'm not on Z100. But seriously, I can think of no better way than honoring my dear old, well, not so old, 66, my dear dad, on his birthday, then sharing some of the music he shared with me. And what better way to start with than, what else, a great record.
Oh, he's free as the breeze, he's always at ease. He lives in the jungle and hangs by his knees as he swings through the trees without a trapeze in his DVD. He's got a union card and he's practicing hard to play the guitar. Gonna be a big star, yeah, he's gonna go far and carry moonbeams home in a jar. He orders chess, guitar, core, COD, makes A and E, and he's working on B. Digs C and W and R and B, and me and a chimpanzee agree that one day soon he'll be a celebrity. Get it, get it, get it, get it! Ow! Guitar man! He's a guitar man! He's all you can stand! Give him a hand, guitar man! Got a girl named Jane with no last name, kinda homely and plain, but he loves her just the same, cause she kindles a flame and it drives him insane when he hears her sing. She really does her thing, it's her claim to fame. Come on, sing one, Jane. He likes to get drunk and sing boogie woogie, and it sounds real funky. Come on, your time, boy. Sing one, monkey. Here we go. Let's hear it for the monkey. Woo! On Saturday night, they need some excitement. Jane gets right, and the monkey gets tight, and their voices unite in the pale moonlight, and it sounds all right. Yeah, it's dynamite. It's out of sight, let's hear it right now.
Was sitting by the fire talking to O'Reilly's daughter. Suddenly I thought something to me head like somebody O'Reilly's daughter. Giddy-ay-ay, giddy-ay-ay, for the one night, Riley, giddy-ay-ay. Riley had an old big drum. Well, Riley played in the big bass room. Riley had a mind for more than a slaughter. Riley had a bright red lips and eye to get that tiny little blade off. Giddy-ay-ay, 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 for the one night, Riley, giddy-ay-ay. Riley had an old big drum. The rays were blue, the colonel and the major and the captain thought of the sergeant and the private and the drummer boy too, but the ready chance with Riley's daughter. Giddy-ay-ay, 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 for the one-night Riley, giddy-ay-ay. Riley, your old big drum. Well, I got me a ring and a parson too, and I got me a scratch and a married father. Send me down to a peaceful life, happy as a king with Riley's daughter. Giddy-ay-ay, 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 for the one-night Riley, giddy-ay-ay. Riley, your old big drum. Suddenly a footstep on the stair. Who should it be but Riley out for slaughter, with two pistols in his hand, looking for the man that had married his daughter. Giddy-ay-ay, 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 for the one-night Riley, giddy-ay-ay. Where did you all big drum? And a cocktail Riley by the hair, and it up his head in a pail of water. Fired his pistols into the air, stabbed like quicker than he married his daughter. Giddy-ay-ay, 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 for the one-night Riley, giddy-ay-ay.
If you're a good American, that means you like to own things. Well, now's your chance. You can own a piece of my show. That's right, Dave's Gone By is ready to promote you. If you have a product, event, or service to hawk shamelessly, you can buy 30 or 60 seconds of advertising time on my show. You can even be a sponsor. Just imagine. This week's News Gone By is brought to you by you. We'll be right back after this word from your product. Advertising on Dave's Gone By is cost-effective and reaches listeners not only on Long Island, but thanks to WGBB.com all over the world. To get a piece of the Dave, call 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com. To see our disgustingly low ad rates, check our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. Remember, you could be talking to you right now. Are you listening? We are the youth. We'll take your fascism away. We are the youth.
Dave, what are you doing?
I'm singing your theme song.
My theme song?
The opening number to your show, Joe Salzone Live.
You listen to my show? But you're a knee-jerk left-wing hippie.
I'm not. Besides, you're a puritanical right-wing kook.
Maybe true, but I listen to all viewpoints, and I do it every Saturday night at 7:30 on WGBB.
The station that serves your community. We are the youth.
Shut up.
Sorry. It's 8:06 p.m. and time for our weekly segment, The News Gone By, jokes and commentary about events of the past week from a fatherly perspective. Bad as our snowstorm was, South Korea had a worse problem with heat. 120 people were killed when a mentally ill man lit up a container filled with flammable liquid and tossed it into a crowded subway car. The fire engulfed one train and spread to another. Dozens of bodies were burned beyond recognition, and the arsonist was identified as Kim Dae-han, who once threatened to burn down a hospital that gave him unsatisfactory treatment. Now, the site has been declared a special disaster zone, although the charred subway cars, with their overcrowding, poor air circulation, and insufficient exits, may get a new lease on life. Landlords in Chicago are already bidding on them, saying they're perfect to convert into nightclubs. It was a bad week for the elements. Snow, then flooding yesterday, and a bunch of fires. First Japan, then Chicago, and then Rhode Island, where nearly 100 people died in a fire at a rock concert. Go figure. All the exits in the club were open and working, and the place wasn't even full to capacity. But of course, a club that small wasn't required to have a sprinkler system, so folks were out of luck. And did you see that amazing video footage on the news? The band Great White was playing with some pyrotechnics in the background. So quickly that went out of control, and the place went up in about 3 minutes. The club owner is blaming the band for not warning him about the pyrotechnics. The band blames the owner and says they did warn him. Whoever is responsible for the demise of these 100 people, people who burned painfully and horribly to death, the real tragedy is that they had to spend their last precious moments on Earth listening to Great White. On second thought, maybe it was just a mass suicide. In political news, more names are being thrown into the ring for the 2004 presidential race. On Wednesday, Congressman Dick Gephardt announced his candidacy, pushing a platform of globalism, health care, and pension reform, and tax credits instead of tax cuts. Gephardt joined the field just a day after former Illinois Senator Carol Moseley Braun declared her intention to run. Many of the Democrats believe she's been tapped just to give black voters a less radical candidate than Al Sharpton. But those are just three of the current contenders. They join Joseph Lieberman, Howard Dean, John Kerry, John Edwards, and Dennis Kucinich in the race. And there's still more who are close to announcing a run, including Delaware Senator Joe Biden, Senator and son of a Senator Chris Dodd, retired General Wesley Clark, Texas Church Deacon Willie Carter, construction mogul Fern Pena, and small businessmen and crackpots Randy Crow and, yes, Lyndon LaRouche. I've also obtained a list of other hopefuls considering a presidential campaign. Here's their names: Abe Aronson, Dave Abelson, Abe Adams, Al Adams, Joe Adamski, Mary Adamson, Steve Adamson, Stephen Adamson III, Peter Agliotti, Eileen Alsop, Kevin Amendola, Shirley Amundson, Eric Appleyard, Calpurnia Arnell, Victor... You know, this is taking longer than I have time for. Basically, the Democratic Party has asked that everyone who is not planning to run for president in 2004 on the Democratic, Liberal, or Green Party ticket, everyone who's not planning to run, please send them an email. Otherwise, you will be assumed to be running for president in 2004. It's a way of narrowing things down a bit. Now, the first Democratic debate will be held at Madison Square Garden in late October. Kind of a switch there, as the press and TV cameras will be on the stage, and the 50,000 or so contenders will be seated in the actual hall. And let me just go on record that I, personally, shall not seek, nor will I accept, a nomination for presidency in 2004. However, I am forming an exploratory committee for 2008. I have no experience and absolutely no leadership skills, but, you know, I could use a job, and I like living near Georgetown, and I'm short, so if anybody tried to assassinate me, they'd probably miss and hit one of the Secret Service people instead. I call my campaign Dave's Gone Bipartisan, and I'm already accepting donations that may or may not go into the campaign fund. To be honest, we need carpeting in the living room, so that kind of takes precedence right now. But I am accepting personal checks. They're not tax-deductible, but I won't tell if you won't. So that's Dave Lefkowitz for president in 2008. I think I need 50,000 signatures or something, so if they all come in on personal checks, I'd be in really great shape. Email me if you want more information, or if you want to hear my views on taxes. I hate them. Capital punishment. Yes, the way the government's going, I think the capital should be punished. AIDS research. I've tried doing it, but I'm just not smart enough to find the cure. And foreign imports. I'm generally for them, but I draw the line at Roberto Benigni and Celine Dion. So if you think, as I do, David be great in 2008, drop me an email at davesgoneby@aol.com and let's plan strategy. I'll bring the donuts, you bring the cash. On the legal front, a German court found Munir Motasadek guilty of conspiring to help the terrorists responsible for the attacks of 9/11. The Moroccan-born immigrant paid the rent and helped cover for Mohammed Atta and his cohorts as they all lived as students in Hamburg in the early 1990s. Motasadek trained with Al-Qaeda and was shown to be very much in sympathy with Atta's radical and violent actions against Israel and the West. This was the very first conviction of anyone related to the World Trade Center bombing. Motasadek was found guilty on 3,000 counts of accessory to murder. And what was his sentence? 15 years in prison. 15, that's the maximum under German law. Leave it to Germany to be cavalier about mass murder, right? 3,000 dead, 5,475 days in prison. That's less than a day and a half in jail per corpse. People want to know why Germany isn't backing the U.S. in a war against Iraq? It's because for them, the World Trade Center attack was like a parking violation. Yeah, why should we kill these poor Arab boys? It was just a traffic accident. It is very hard to do a three-point turn in a jumbo jet. And just in case you were watching the UN debates and thought all Germans were pacifists, here's a story from Reuters, and I'm reading this almost verbatim. A lovesick 58-year-old man in Dusseldorf was sentenced to 7 years in jail after attacking a factory worker with a pair of bull castration tongs. The circus trapeze artist had tried to emasculate the man using the steel pincers after accusing him of having a relationship with his former girlfriend, a 46-year-old belly dancer who performed in the same circus. Using the tongs and a knife in the February 2002 assault, the trapeze artist inflicted serious injury on the victim, but the factory worker was able to fight off the smaller attacker and prevent more serious injury. Said a court spokesman, fortunately, the factory worker didn't lose anything except for a lot of blood. The assailant was convicted of attempted murder and grievous bodily harm. He was also fired from the circus. A spokesman for the local bull community expressed outrage over the incident, saying, wait a minute, castration tongs? The farmer told us those were handles for carrying the feed bucket, that son of a bitch. In music news, time for the tasteless riddle of the week. What do a McDonald's employee and a Nashville cemetery have in common? The answer? Right now, they're both holding a stinky paycheck. Another riddle. What do Nassau and Suffolk County have in common with Ireland? Strict anti-smoking laws in public, that's what. Hard to believe, but as of January 1st, 2004, it will be illegal to smoke in a bar in Ireland. Officials say they passed the law for health reasons, overlooking perhaps one obvious fact. Irish pubs are the only place on earth where cigarettes are healthy. Imagine how much the Irish would drink if they didn't have something else to put in their mouths between sips. From Ireland, we hop over to England, where a new law forces motorists to cough up $8 if they want to drive into central London. It's a controversial pet plan of London Mayor Ken Livingston to ease congestion in the bustling financial district. It's hoped that the toll will cut traffic by 20%, boost the buses and subways, and raise more than $200 million for public transportation. New York Mayor Bloomberg, asked whether he'd institute a similar fee, said he preferred the traditional method of keeping motorists out of Midtown, filling the streets with jaywalkers, construction cones, Black History book vendors, and psychotic bike messengers. I'll try that again. Bike messengers. Good way to ruin a joke, Dave. Okay, last Sunday, the 100th annual American International Toy Fair kicked off with a parade outside the Javits Center. All was fine until the parade accidentally collided with the anti-war demonstration moving up Fifth Avenue. Now, nobody was arrested, but the jostling caused a few incidents. Mrs. Potato Head complained of a masher. Devout Muslims threw stones at Star Wars Princess Amidala for showing too much forehead. And the Sesame Street character Elmo surprised longtime fans when he shouted, "The next person who tickles me feels my 9mm up his ass." A slew of medical mishaps in the news. We begin with a terrible story from the Associated Press. Linda McDougal, age 46, was diagnosed with cancer in May when doctors noticed a suspicious mass appearing on her mammogram. She was told the cancer was so aggressive, the only course of treatment was chemo, radiation, and a double mastectomy. She underwent the operation in June at United Hospital of St. Paul. And while she was in recovery, the doctor came by and said he had even more bad news. The woman feared that they didn't get all the cancer, that she was a goner. But that wasn't it. She had a clean bill of health. Except, the doctor also examined tissue of the breasts he'd amputated, and he didn't find any malignancy there either. Turns out, tissue from Linda McDougal's biopsy was mistakenly switched with tissue from another woman's body. That woman had already been treated. Meanwhile, the wrongly diagnosed Linda McDougal says she's still fighting infections and needs reconstructive surgery before she decides whether to sue for malpractice. Seems like a no-brainer to me. This woman is owed big, especially considering the glib way the doctor initially told her she had cancer. "This is difficult," he said, "but I have a couple of things to get off my chest, and so do you." Another medical malady. After waiting months for a donor, 17-year-old Jessica Santillan entered Duke University Hospital for a heart and lung transplant 2 weeks ago. 3 days after the seemingly successful operation, she suffered a heart attack and was left nearly at death's door. Somehow, the case was mishandled, and the girl received organs that didn't match her O-positive blood type. Hospital officials are investigating how the mix-up happened, since the paperwork shipped with the organs clearly listed them as type A. My guess is it was a simple misunderstanding. Before he started the operation, the doctor asked the nurse, "Are you sure she's blood type A?" And the nurse answered, "Oh, positive." Well, there you go. Anyway, Jessica had a second operation with a different set of donated organs that rather magically appeared less than a week after the first botched operation. She wasn't that a miracle of timing. You get the feeling the higher-ups at Duke University were sending out people like Igor to go find body parts? The chief of surgery was like, "Type O, lungs and a heart. I don't care where you get them. Even a kidney, we can stick a few tubes in it and make it work like a heart. Improvise!" Well, after the second operation, Jessica was still in bad shape with not enough blood going to her brain, which left her with only two options, euthanasia or politics. Well, Jessica ended up dying yesterday, but let's face it, even if she recovered with all those different body parts in her, you get the feeling she would have talked like, "Friend, heart good, type A bad, phenomenal!" And one more medical mishap. A man who received a liver transplant got more than he bargained for. His old liver was riddled with chronic hepatitis B and a cancerous tumor, so he underwent a transplant in 1999. The operation went well, but the day after being sent home, he ate some cashews and went into anaphylactic shock. Turns out, the new liver had come from a 15-year-old boy who died of an allergic reaction to peanuts. Now, it's very rare for an allergy to be passed on through an organ transplant, but 3 years later, doctors have made the connection that the boy's liver somehow passed on a life-threatening nut allergy to the man, which is both sad and ironic. After all, the poor guy gets a brand new organ, and it won't work with his nuts. In sports news, Baltimore Orioles pitcher Steve Beckler was working out in spring training last Sunday when he complained of dizziness. He was brought to the hospital and treated for dehydration and heat exhaustion, but his condition worsened, and on Monday morning, the 23-year-old athlete was pronounced dead. A third-round draft pick in 1998, Beckler spent most of last year in AAA, where he endured a 4.09 ERA and a 6-11 record. This, after making his major league debut last September in three relief appearances, racking up a 13.50 ERA. At the funeral, Beckler's teammates lined up to throw dirt on his grave. The spirit of their fallen comrade was obviously with them, because only one out of every three chaucers of earth actually landed on the coffin. Finally, Florida lawmakers are looking to remove a 2001 statute this week. The law requires some women to advertise their sexual history in newspapers before placing children up for adoption. Critics dubbed it the Scarlet Letter Law because it applies to women who aren't sure who the kid's father is. These women had to try to find the dad by running newspaper ads in cities where conception might have occurred. This is not a joke. The women had to list their names and descriptions, the children's names, the names and descriptions of the men they had sex with, and the dates they had sex. Even the Florida Attorney General's office has made the unusual move of not defending the law, making it that much more likely for it to be stricken from the books. Instead, the governor is likely to approve an alternate bill which calls for a confidential paternal registry. That means men who fathered children can go on record as having done so, and then they're notified if their partner decides to put the offspring up for adoption. This method has already worked in California. Though, not surprisingly, every third entry in their registry begins with the words, I, David Crosby. And I, David Lefkowitz, have just finished reading the news gone by for February 23rd, 2003. Please send your comments, opinions, and donations to my presidential campaign to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062, or email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. Please, no castration tongs. I don't even watch The Sopranos. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By and the segment I call The World Weird Web. That's where we look at odd or funny or wildly wonderful websites on the internet and encourage you to check them out. My wife found this one this week, and it's not a joke. She saw it on the news. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, has, of course, been following Ridge and Rumsfeld's lead about disaster preparedness. With the national alert at Code Orange and the U.S. itching for war with Iraq, the Department of Homeland Security has wisely backed off the terror talk for fear of inciting panic. Instead, they've moved towards personal empowerment, duck and cover style. What should people do in case of a terrorist attack? Duct tape, duct tape, duct tape, eighth wonder of the world. A little duct tape, a flashlight, some canned food. You can make it through the next 9/11, the next Pearl Harbor, the next Michael Jackson interview. And, okay, it is a good idea for Americans to have an emergency kit, even for natural disasters like earthquakes and hurricanes. After all, it's no fun to go looking for a flashlight after the lights have gone out. But FEMA has also seen fit to target a rather odd audience for its message of anti-terror preparation. If you visit the FEMA website, www.fema.gov, F-E-M as in Mary, A, dot G-O-V, you'll see all the basic stuff about the organization. But if you go to www.fema.gov/kids, you actually come to a bright yellow page that reads FEMA for Kids. And you have these cute little cartoon logos where there are games and quizzes, and you can order cool FEMA stuff, and you can become a disaster action kid. I'm going to read this verbatim off the website. Check this out. You can become a FEMA Disaster Action Kid and get a certificate. Disaster Action Kids also get to be part of a special email group and will receive exciting news and information directly from FEMA on a regular basis. Being a Disaster Action Kid is fun. Disaster Action Kids are prepared. They know what items are needed in a disaster supply kit. They know how to protect their pets during a disaster. They also know what to do during each type of disaster. Being a disaster action kid isn't easy, but it's worth it. Get your friends involved, too. When your checklist is complete, fill in this form to get a certificate with your name on it, and then just print it out. Now, if you click elsewhere on the site, see, there's a link for what you might feel in a disaster. Well, let's see. I would feel warm liquid running down my underpants. That's what I feel. You want to talk about disaster evacuation? Check the back of my Hanes. But seriously, let's see the advice they give on the website. Disasters can happen. They often happen quickly and without warning, and they can be scary for you and your parents. You may have to leave your home, and you may not be able to go to school. Aww. Can't you just see, like, kids planning out disasters that can happen on the next Thursday when they have a test? But the website says it's okay to cry during a disaster, but remember, it will get better. Unless, of course, you die of chemical poisoning. No, but the advice on the website is all sensible and helpful. I just wonder if it's putting the cart before the horse. Do we really need 7-year-olds running around worried that the next car backfiring outside the house will send everybody to the basement for a year? And, yes, the website even has a mascot, Herman the Hermit Crab. He's a cute little thing, kind of like a wasp version of Sebastian in Beauty and the Beast, and he tells a story in English and Spanish. It's Herman and the Hunt for a Disaster-Proof Shell. Again, if you think I am kidding, go to www.fema.gov/kids/Herman. And of course, Herman is not subject to terrorism. In his story, his shell blows off in a hurricane. So he gets another shell, and he straps it on tighter. Only it rains, and he has to move on again because of the flood. All goes well for our crustacean Job until he moves over an earthquake, and his shell gets cracked by falling debris. So he goes off in search of the safest shell he can find. Now, I'm reading this from the website. This is Herman. When I went looking for yet another new shell, I made sure it was not too big, it was not too small, it was windproof, it was floodproof, and it was earthquake-proof. I checked and double-checked my shell. I read reports that taught me how to become disaster-resistant. Some of the things were simple, and others were a bit harder. But all in all, it was well worth the time and trouble. The end, right? No. The stupid crab has a barbecue and accidentally sets himself on fire. Somehow he survives and finds himself another shell, this one completely FEMA safe. And now Herman travels the world warning people how disasters can happen. Finito. And I wonder why they ended the story right there. Why didn't they have a couple of seagulls dive bomb into his ass? You know, oh wow, better make my next shell bird-proof. Again, it's all well-intentioned and yet somehow offensive. I'm not sure why. I mean, there's an actual calendar of disasters, famous disasters in history, from 9/11 to the San Francisco earthquake. This week in disaster history, February 25th, 2001, a 6.8 magnitude earthquake hit Washington State. February 27th, 1998, El Niño causes flooding and mudslides in California. I'm amazed they haven't come out with disaster trading cards. Wow, you've got Tennessee Tornado 1997? I've got two of the Peruvian 1994 landslide. Want to trade? You can go to the games page on the FEMA for Kids website and do little games connected to all different types of natural disasters. For example, a tsunami has just hit FEMA Beach. Again, I'm reading this. This is directly off the website. A tsunami has just hit FEMA Beach and has rearranged a few things. Please put the 9 objects back where they belong to see the cyber prize. And there's things like a palm tree, a fish, trained seal, a beach ball. And you have to put the fish and seal in the ocean and the beach ball in the supply hut, an old shoe in the garbage. Although, considering this is a Republican administration, you should probably put the fish and seal in the garbage and the old shoe in the water. But if you get all the things back where they belong, a happy frog starts dancing. And you can also play disaster math. I'm not making this up. They're like SAT math problems geared towards tragedy. A small earthquake hit Northern California on a Tuesday afternoon. It was felt by people in 3 cities: Los Monos, population 3,482, Mount Good, population 4,210, and Meganville, population 872. how many people felt the earthquake? 5,684? 8,564? They have these multiple choice answers. Here's another question. It takes a strap 50 inches long to strap a water heater to the wall to keep it from falling over during an earthquake. I swear to God, this is one of the questions on the website. There are 420 homes in Los Manos, California. If every single home in Los Manos strapped their water heater to the wall, how many inches of strap would it take? 1,200 inches? 50 inches? And if you don't like earthquake math, there's tornado math, wildfire math, the hurricane house game. There's even a joke page. What happens to a golfer in a thunderstorm? Answer, he has a shocking experience. Ha! What did the big volcano say to the little volcano? You're too young to smoke. That one's pretty good, actually. But I don't know, the more I surf this website, the weirder the vibe is, because it's so professionally done and thought out and so astute in its way, yet so bizarrely alarmist for its target audience. Go see for yourself, www.fema.gov/kids. And then take a trip with Julia and Robbie, the disaster twins, then live in Enietown, which is just about to get struck by a hurricane. All this and more, courtesy of FEMA. And we'll end this segment with my favorite one-liner from the joke page. What disaster is a duck most afraid of? Answer, an earthquake! Ha! It's a world weird web indeed. If you have any suggestions for future URLs, email davesgoneby@aol.com. All right, one more joke. Why did the flood dance? Because he wanted to go with the flow. Oh.
What has happened down here? Is the wind have changed? Clouds roll in from the north and it start to rain. Rained real hard and it rained for a real long time. 6 feet of water in the streets of Evangeline. River rose all day, the river rose all night. Some people got lost in the flood. Some people got away all right. River have busted. Lay down a flag of mine. 6 feet of water in the streets of Evangeline. Louisiana, Louisiana, that child will wash us away. That child will wash us away. Louisiana, Louisiana. President Cooley's come down in a railroad train. Little fat man with a notepad in his hand. President says little fat man admit a shame. What the river has done, left poor crackers lay. Louisiana, Louisiana, they're trying to wash us away. They're trying to wash us away. Louisiana, Louisiana, they're trying to wash us away. They're trying to wash us away. They're trying to wash us away.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. I'm Dave, and I've got Dad. He's my guest on the special birthday show. Happy birthday, Dad.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we're going to start right from the beginning, because I just want to get this out there and find out some of the basics. So they're here in perpetuity for posterity. You were born when?
in 1937.
Right, February 23rd, 1937.
Right.
And your credit card number is... No, I'm just... And
what do you want, American Express or Discover?
Discover, because, you know, the thieves can save extra money that way. where were you? Is it Brooklyn or Manhattan?
In Brooklyn.
Cool. So your folks were living in Brooklyn at that time already?
Yes. Yes. Dad came from Brownsville.
Uh-huh.
And,
Grandma.
Grandma was in Borough Park, I think it was.
Well, they were living together by the point you were born, I would assume.
Oh, you thought... Well, no, I thought you meant where they were from originally.
But wait, they were... Well, originally, wasn't Grandpa... They weren't.
Grandpa
both.
Was born in Europe.
Right, okay.
And Lucy, my mother, was born here.
Mm-hmm.
And they originally lived... Their parents were on in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
And Pop's parents were in... what we call Brownsville, I guess it's now called East New York.
Cool. And that was that weird thing that I have had four grandparents, only one of whom was born in this country, and that was Grandma.
Grandma,
right?
Yeah.
Grandma Lucy on your side.
Correct.
And she was the only one who never had the birth certificate. All these other people, they were born in Hungary, they were born in the middle of, like, Poland, Russia, wasteland.
That's
and we
right.
had birth certificates for them.
Not only that. I think Mom was the only one who had a doctor attending when she was born. And she's the only one who wound up without a birth certificate. And they had searched for it for years and never were able to find it.
Was she just hiding it? Was that the deal? Was she just not...
I don't think so. Because for years we didn't know when to celebrate her birthday.
Yeah, I think so.
And then we wound up changing the date that we... would celebrate it.
Well, what birthday was it then?
It started out March 8th or something like that, and then changed it to March 18th.
Okay. And what was Grandpa's birthday, Grandpa Sam?
Grandpa was born in 1903.
Wow.
And I don't really remember the date offhand.
Cool. All right. Do you remember, what was your first childhood memory?
Well, I don't know if I remember this or if it's vivid in my mind because of listening to Dad talk about it. When I was a kid and Dad had a pharmacy in Brownsville, Crown Heights, they used to put me in, in a box on the floor.
Yeah.
With a bunch of powders and chemicals and stuff.
Razor
you know.
Blades, yeah. A couple of revolvers. You know. A set of steak knives. It's like, have fun.
Not exactly.
I kind of wanted you at first, but you're annoying. So they put you on a... how old were you? They would give you all these, like, incredibly toxic chemicals to what?
David, you're adding things. I didn't say toxic.
You worked at a pharmacy. What did you expect?
Of course, the gun.
No, but seriously, what would they do? This is your first childhood memory now. What happened?
Yeah, little powders and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd mix them with water, and they would turn colors.
And you would drink them. What?
No,
but were you mixing up medicines to help him in the store? Was that the in the pharmacy?
No, you know, he would make me think that I was helping him.
I got you. here's one story I remember you telling me about Grandpa, that he had been doing pharmacy for so many years. He was a graduate of Fordham Pharmaceutical School, and he had a special talent that he could do.
Yes, pouring from a 5-gallon jug into a 6-ounce bottle.
And you watched him do this? You could see him without spilling a drop?
Well, most of the time. But this one particular time, he was pouring some kind of acid. I don't remember which one.
Yeah.
And I said, my God, Dad, it's running down your arm. He says, it's all right. I'll wash it off when I'm finished.
Oh, God. And he was fine, right? Or
yeah.
Was he actually hurt at that point?
No. Every once in a while, I'd notice that his skin on his fingers was turning brown.
God!
But...
That only happens to me when I run out of toilet paper. But actually, a less happy memory. The other thing I remember about Grandpa's work years was, I don't know if it's some kind of record, but he had some legal, well, not legal trouble, but some difficulties.
Yeah, he was held up about more than 40 times.
40.
Yeah.
He was robbed.
Well, the problem being that when Dad worked, he worked 6 days a week and every seventh Sunday.
Okay.
This is when he was already, his store was closed, and he was working for somebody else.
Okay.
And the person for whom he was working was part of a group of seven local pharmacies. And they had this association where each one would take a turn being open on a Sunday, because at that time they realized that there had to be at least access to a pharmacy somewhere in the area.
Okay.
And you had a pharmacy on just about every three or four blocks. So people, the customers were always had a way to get their medicines. And he, unfortunately, would usually work opening to closing, which in the pharmacy meant 9 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock at night, that sort of thing. So 40 times at least in his career he was held up. And he told me that there was only one time he was really afraid. And that was when he kept talking about this fellow with a big black gun. He said two guys came in, and these guys were really, really looked mean, looked like they meant business. And thank God they didn't hurt him.
Right.
But,
and was he ever hurt in any of these things? Even, you know.
One time, one of the robbers kicked him for no apparent reason. And maybe the kid was high on something. Who the hell knows?
But that was that what they were generally there for. They were taking drugs and they want money? Or, I mean, why a pharmacy?
When it started, well, it was a pharmacy because it was open until 11 o'clock at night.
Mm.
And other stores, you generally closed at 6 or 8 or whatever. But you could always count on a pharmacy.
Right. And so you were saying when it started, it was more for money, and then later on it was more about drugs, or...
Well, I think it, in his working days, it was almost always money.
Mm.
And every once in a while, somebody would go for the drugs.
Well, this was in Brooklyn? Where was it again?
Yeah, well, most of his working life was in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
His store was, as I said, in Brownsville.
Right.
But that one closed during the Depression.
Oh, wow.
And then when he worked for somebody else... Most of the time, it was in Bay Ridge.
Cool.
I think that's called Bay Ridge. 8th Avenue in Brooklyn, around 59th Street.
I don't know, but
well, anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry. That was a nice area, lovely area, Scandinavian people. Dad was very fond of his customers, and I think they were very fond of him.
Hmm.
I remember the story he told me about the one holdup where this customer of his came in and said, who did it, Sam? And my father said, I don't know who it was. He says, well, you find out who it was, you let me know, and I'll take care of him.
Yeah. Oh, I vaguely remember another story sort of like that. That's ringing some kind of weird bell. Was it like cousins who took care of something like that at some point? It may not have been that particular incident.
Well, no, this was fellow who had a very dangerous job, and he said he knows how to take care of, deal with stuff like this.
All right.
And Pop said, what are you talking about? He says, well, when I work and I go into these bad areas, I usually carry a tire iron and a tire chain. And he was a milkman.
Okay.
And there were doors on either side of the truck. And when anything would happen, you know, he'd reach for his tire iron or tire chain. This one particular time, early in the morning, he opens the sliding door of the truck, and there are three fellas one with a knife, and they want his money. So he grabs the tire iron.
Yeah.
And bats the knife out of the guy's hand, grabs two of them, pulls them into the truck, pulls them into the truck.
Yeah.
The third one runs away screaming. And he's now beating this guy, the two of them, mercilessly on the floor of the truck.
Now, is he recounting the story, or is that how...
This is how my pop told it to me and how it was told to him.
Wow.
And he drives them to the cemetery. And he gets there, and they spot somebody, some fellas, digging in a grave. He throws them out of the truck and kicks them into the grave and tells them to take the shovels and dig deep.
Wow.
Because they're going to be under the coffin the next day.
Excellent.
They get down on their hands and knees and they, please, mister, please. No, no, no.
Cool.
And needless to say, he never had any trouble after that.
Wow.
You had to see this guy and you'd understand the story. I mean, he was like as tall, as wide as he was tall.
Oh, I see. So... Well,
and strong.
I mean, so he was a big guy. He wasn't just fat.
Well, no, he was like five. He was short in stature, mm-hmm. probably 5'8", 5'7". But, wow. Broad, strong. I guess throwing those milk cartons or crates around all the time built them up. And in those days, there were no containers. That was all bottles.
Those glass things, sure. Sure. Speaking of, and just to close this segment up, I want to congratulate you, not only for your birthday, but we're talking about, you know, large people, and you're a rather large person, but not as large as you were. Why don't you explain a little bit?
Well, your mother, God bless her.
My mother, Brenda.
Found a little help hint on the internet. She doesn't let me call it a diet. We call it a way of life. And what I do is I take two glasses of water before each meal. It's either two glasses, about 16 ounces of water before each meal.
Okay.
And then a little bit sensible eating. And before you know it, I'm down 70 pounds.
Is it 70 now?
Is it 70?
Last time it was 50.
I'm sorry. It's 53 or 54.
No,
I'm looking ahead. I'm hoping ahead.
Yeah. Well, you were up to 270,
That's correct. You
should be in like the
that
two.
That is correct. To my shame,
well,
you know, being in a wheelchair most of the time,
right?
My opportunity for physical activity is greatly limited.
Right.
And you eat and you sit. You eat and you sit. And you get fat.
Sounds like a good life to me. I think
I
like that.
It would be without the fat.
I'm going to come home to my wife and I'm going to be like, you know, hon, I've just decided what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I'm going to eat and then I'm going to sit. You know, I'm going to sleep too. I'm going to add that because sleep is good. I'm going to eat, sit, and sleep. That sounds pretty neat to me.
Well, let me tell you something. I have my cart, my scooter that I take in the street.
Uh-huh.
And the kids, the young kids, they're always looking at it. Oh, how great that is.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I had one.
Do you run them down?
No. I just try to explain to them. I said, it's a great thing, but you wouldn't want to have to use it.
Right. Of course. I mean, they're not going to understand that.
No, of course they don't understand. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, they don't know me, and they don't know...
Well, they're lucky. No, I don't know that.
Oh,
just
on my birthday, a zinger?
No zingers on my dad's birthday. And I do want to wish you, of course, a very, very a happy birthday to you and many, many, many more.
Okay.
I want to thank you for joining me on the show tonight. I hope we get to do more of these interviews and talk
pleasure.
To you in the years ahead, more about your life and stuff. So, mit Mazel, mit
Glück. Thank you.
Many, many more. Thank you, Dad, for joining me on Dave's Gone By.
Baby, 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 baby
1940s and early 50s, young Gilbert Calderon would spend half his spare time helping out in his dad's candy store, the other half playing stickball. But then he broke his leg sliding into the sidewalk during a stoop ball game. Desperately looking for something else to do, he borrowed a friend's conga drum and practiced. Gilbert soon had a group and an agent, and eventually they were booked to play the famed Stardust Ballroom. Except that week, Gilbert opened the newspaper looking for an ad for the gig, but instead he saw the ballroom advertising Joe Cuba and his sextet. Gilbert called his agent and said, "Hey, who is this schmuck, Joe Cuba, who stole my job?" And the agent said, "That's you." The club owner said, "To attract any customers, you need a stage name." And Joe Cuba was it. And not only did the group spend nearly three decades on the salsa charts, the number we heard, Bang Bang, crossed over in a big way and made the 1966 hit parade. Cuba retired in the 1970s and then made a couple of comebacks through the mid-90s. But apparently he's ill right now, so I don't think he'll be giving us any more Bang Bangs for our bucks. But before Ricky Martin, before Reuben Blades, Latin music did hit the charts, and in Joe Cuba's case, with a double bang. My dad used to play that song all the time. I always found it a little creepy, but I loved the piano in it. And speaking of some bang bang percussion, Goodman, of course, with Gene Krupa on drums, Sing Sing Sing, one of my dad's favorite jazz numbers. The song became ubiquitous in recent years, but no less electrifying. And as usual, I didn't have enough time to play all the music I would have liked to on the show, but I also hope I've offered a little musical appreciation of my dad's musical appreciation. The Clancy Brothers, Benny Goodman, Joe Cuba, Ray Stevens. If you'd like to see a playlist of the music on this and previous episodes of Dave's Gone By, just visit our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. We've got a lot of pictures up, plus information on how to purchase cassettes of previous Dave's Gone By episodes. The website also tells you how to advertise or sponsor segments on the show and information about how to join the Bystanders Club. It's still only $10, and you get all the cool stuff. Log on to our website for the details, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. If you forget the URL, just Google search Dave's Gone By, and we're right up top. We have a Super Bowl update for you. Early in the third period, Tampa Bay just tacked on another touchdown to make it 27-3 over Oakland. Seems like the game's out of reach for the Raiders, but you never know. Tune in next week and we'll update you on the score of this thrilling contest. I don't have a Grammy update for you, I don't have that information, but before I go, I want to remind you to catch four other shows on WGBB. Long Island's Dating with Bonnie D. Graham,
Fridays at 6, Entertainment Long Island, hosted by Don Lewis, with live country, folk, and bluegrass music by Eddie Hug and the Moonshiners. Saturdays at 5:30, Joe Salzone Live, with political talk, Saturday nights at 7:30, and of course, the Gang of Teen America, right before me, Sunday nights at 6:30. And now the thank you portion of our program. Thank you, station manager Joey, engineer Joe, and engineer Paul. Thank you to my wife, Joyce, for her help and suggestions, and for nursing me back to health. She caught my cold, of course, but a little penicillin and Zovirax will clear that right up, hon. Thank you to my dad for giving me a good home and a lot of love and for letting me be what I wanted to be in my life. I know you regret it now, but when I make my first million, we'll both be too old to appreciate it. Okay, thank all of you out there. Thank you for listening to me again this week. Next week, a whole different show. We'll have that long-awaited interview with theater critic, director, and producer Richmond Shepherd. We'll talk about that dollar buck and a half facilities charge they get you for at Madison Square Garden and all the Broadway theaters. Attorney General Spitzer calls it scalping. I'm inclined to agree. We'll hear what Richmond thinks next week, plus a whole bunch of other stuff. Right here on Dave's Gone By on WGBB and WGBB.com, Sunday nights at 7:30. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night, happy birthday, Dad, and gone by.